This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series.
Maor Kim's War, Part 2 of 3, written by Joe Jackson. The next several days saw similar scenes play out in the dungeon. The prince's shrewd nature rose to the forefront again for a time, but the Maor Kim continued to stall, answering questions with questions and meeting threats with promises that he would yet destroy the kingdom of Kashmi. As the Knoll continued to frustrate the prince's attempts to get answers, Josiah stopped inviting his nobles to come and watch. He became more violent, and while the general could understand taking drastic steps to safeguard the kingdom, the beatings made it tougher and tougher for Montague to stay silent as he saw the Maor Kim bludgeoned and bloodied, yet still remain steadfast.
"He's waiting for something. His people must be enacting some trap," the general thought after the third day of interrogations.
Montague rushed to the capital's main garrison and dispatched scouts to the borderlands. There had to be something they were missing. Despite everything Josiah said or implied, the Maor Kim was no fool, and if he had been captured, it was for a reason. What the general couldn't wrap his mind around was how the Knolls planned to destroy Kashmi. They weren't a terribly populous people, living up in the mountain valleys between the eastern and western kingdoms, generally doing their best to stay out of the way of all. They didn't have the numbers to sack a kingdom, even if they recruited some of the other creatures residing in or under the mountains. Unless, perhaps, they have a dragon. That thought set his feet moving to the castle towers where the messenger birds were housed. The cooing of the pigeons greeted him as he reached the tower's top and strode toward the castle message master sitting at his post. The man rose and saluted the general respectfully, and Montague returned the gesture.
"What can I do for you, sir?"
the message master asked. Montague looked in the direction of the far end of the mountain chain, where the closest resident dragon made its abode.
"Anything recent about the fire lizard in the north?" he asked.
"No, sir. Beast has been asleep for some years now," the man replied, scratching at his balding head. "Rest assured, if it emerges, we'll know soon enough."
"That's exactly what I'm afraid of," the general muttered before he left.
He wondered, as he descended all the way back to the dungeon for the day's festivities, could a Knoll convince a dragon to attack us? What other explanations can there be? The kingdoms have been at peace for years. There's nothing else shy of a dragon that would be strong enough to bring meaningful harm to these lands. Unless it is a demon, or something of that nature.
There were numerous beasts and monsters out in the unsettled deep forests and the foothills that sat in the shadow of the mountains. There wasn't much known of them but rumor and legend, though. Could there be enough of them to pose a credible threat to Kashmi? And even if so, how did they relate to the Knolls? Would they come here at the Maor Kim's call?
Montague was greeted by the sound of a hard slap, rocking the Maor Kim's head to the side as he entered the dungeon. The Knoll's muzzle was now looped shut, not so much that he couldn't speak, but enough to prevent him from biting, or at least giving any more than a puppy's nip. The effect of his beatings were starting to show now. There were rips in his hyena-like ears. His left eye was swollen partially shut. Blood still caked the corner of his mouth where he'd been struck numerous times. The dung that had been used to paint him, for Montague was now certain it had been done to the Maor Kim and not by him, had crusted over along with the blood, making a mess of his fur.
"Ah, General," Josiah greeted him. Only Stourick, General Matcher, and the prince's advisor, Henry Gajek, were in the chamber today, the three elder men saluting General Montague politely as he joined the gathering.
Josiah's frustrations continued to mount. The beatings became more severe, and fewer people were being allowed in. Even Wendra was no longer dangled in front of the Maor Kim to try to threaten him into talking. He must have accepted that her fate was sealed regardless. So good of you to join us. Today, I think we are going to start cutting off bits of this creature until he decides to talk.
Sire, please, Montague said, before he could seriously think about what to follow up with. It was so hard to reconcile what the prince had become while dealing with this gnoll. Was Josiah becoming unhinged part of the gnoll's overall plan? The prince tilted his head, waiting for Montague to continue.
Perhaps we're going about this the wrong way? Are you questioning your prince?
No, Your Highness, but I do think I know how to make him talk without resorting to more brutality, he answered, understanding the wrath behind the question. Indeed, he was questioning the prince's methods, for this was not the man who had held the kingdom together through various social upheavals over the course of his reign, and all Montague could think was that he was incensed with having been outfoxed, and continuing to be outfoxed, by a gnoll.
"Speak, then," Josiah demanded. Montague swallowed. That was a tone that clearly said he might soon be the target of the irritated prince's sudden viciousness.
"We want to know what he plans to do, what his ultimate goal is," the general said. "We know next to nothing about this man."
"It's not a man!"
The general bowed his head, his many questions answered.
"We know next to nothing about this creature. Perhaps we should start there, and then let his tongue spin the web of his own demise?"
"Or ours," he added silently. The gnoll turned and smiled, albeit barely, in Montague's direction.
"Finally, one with a shred of intellect among you. Shame this one does not wear the crown."
Josiah hit the Maokim again, with a closed fist this time, tearing the gnoll's lip against its teeth and bringing forth a few drops of blood. Montague made sure to keep his amusement tucked away when he saw the prince pull his hand close to his side. That punch had hurt Josiah more than the Maokim.
"Keep hitting me, you imbecile,"
the Maokim said.
"The pain you can inflict cannot overshadow the joy in my heart. The knowledge that the longer you keep me alive, the more certain your doom. But should you kill me, you merely send me to my ancestors and—"
Montague headed off another assault by the prince, though he bowed his head when Josiah met his eyes. No words were exchanged, but the prince turned to sit on the bench across from the knoll, allowing Montague to take over the questioning.
"Who are you, sir?"
Montague asked, approaching. His address of the gnoll as Sir drew incredulous stares or scowls from the other men in the room, but he ignored them for the time being.
"You and Wendra have said that Maokim is a title, so what is your name?"
"I no longer have a name,"
the gnoll replied.
"A man's name is his family, and as I no longer have one, I am solely Maokim."
"And what does that mean?"
"As I have said, that is something you will only learn when it is too late."
Montague nodded.
"So who are you then, in your own words? What precipitated this attack upon our kingdom?"
I was a holy man among my people,"
the gnoll answered with a sigh.
"I have long had a strong connection to the spirits of our ancestors, whose wisdom and patience have helped me guide our people to a prosperous state, even sitting between many kingdoms who long considered or still consider us savages, pests to be hunted down and exterminated."
"Are you hoping to visit the wrath of your gods on us?"
General Stourick gasped.
"We have no gods, human. We are children of the earth, no god. But the spirits of our ancestors are all about us. The wisdom of the years, there for those who will but bend an ear to them. And that is the function I long served among my people. Though you might say they also looked at me as a monarch, I have never ruled over them, only advised and guided them."
"So, Maokim is a reference of being a conduit of the spirits?" Montague asked.
"Again, I tell you, sir. You will not understand what it means until it is too late.
Very well, then. So why did you attack our kingdom? And what did you truly hope to accomplish with only 200 men with you?
Men who, I might add, abandoned you when you needed them most, Josiah sneered from behind the general.
That smile crept across the gnoll's muzzle again.
Abandoned? Oh no, human. You completely misunderstand. They did not abandon me. They returned home, just as I ordered.
I knew it! Montague blurted before he could catch himself. This is all a ruse. He has us keeping our eyes on him while something greater comes from elsewhere. Speak, Noel. What are you planning?
3 more days, the Maokim returned. If my estimation is correct, and it may not be, considering how long I have been confined to the cellar, you will get your answer after 3 more days.
Josiah rose with a snarl and struck the gnoll across the temple with the cudgel he kept close at hand these days. Montague bit down the sigh of disappointment when the gnoll's eyes rolled up in his head and he slumped in his chains. As obnoxious as the creature's attitude could be, and as frustrating as it was to try to get answers from him, they were running out of time. If they only had 3 more days to force answers out of him before something terrible happened, this was precisely the sort of delay they couldn't afford.
Let him rest for now. Perhaps he'll be more talkative when he awakens, and I have an inquisitor here, the prince huffed.
Sire! Oh, you can continue to ask him questions, Montague, but refusing to answer is going to begin costing this gnoll body parts, some more enjoyable than others.
But that's what he expects, and even wants to some extent, the general thought.
He watched the prince leave the chamber with the other generals and his advisor, all of whom wore expressions that clearly said they were as perturbed by the prince's recent behavior as Montague was. Perhaps Henry Gajek would be able to talk the prince back to his usual self. Soon, the guards came in to take the prisoner to his cell, and the general left with a sigh.
Running out of time!
He dreamt of fire and smoke, the pall of death heavy over the capital city in the wake of a dragon's flight and a pillaging army of gnolls. Montague walked to the bowl of water on his nightstand and washed his face. Sleep would not come easy after such a nightmare as that. Instead, he dressed casually and left the upper floors of the castle, where he was housed like a visiting dignitary. Descending the many sets of winding stairs, he made his way down to the dungeon, where a single guard watched the entry corridor to the central chamber.
"Would you like the prisoner strapped in, sir?"
the guard asked, sitting up and then nearly bouncing out of his seat to stand tall and salute.
"No, just take me to his cell. Perhaps he'll be more talkative if he's not strapped up and under threat of a beating," Montague said.
"Yes, sir."
The guard opened the way, showing, in Montague's presence at least, the diligence to lock each gateway they passed through behind them. Soon he brought the general through the central chamber and down one of the wings, its cells cold and empty, until they reached the final one, devoid of furnishing. The Maokim sat on the floor in a dark corner, keeping his distance from both the slop pail and the dinner that sat untouched just inside the bars. His head was bowed. He appeared to be asleep. But appearances are certainly deceiving with this one, the general thought. He dismissed the guard with a casual wave, and the man saluted before leaving. Just as Montague suspected, once the gate to the wing clanged shut behind the guard, the gnoll opened his golden eyes and stared at him. After a few moments, the hyena man rose and approached the bars, no hesitation or shame apparent in his movements, despite still being nude and filthy. It was only now that Montague saw him standing there, not stretched out on the Inquisitor's square, that the general appreciated just how large the man was. Montague was a tall man among the kingdom and the court, but the gnoll was easily a hand or more taller, not counting the high ears. And the breadth of his shoulders and the corded muscles of his arms said despite being a holy man, this was a creature of strength. something Montague already knew was true in the sense of spirit. The Maorcum didn't grab the bars pleadingly, didn't look remorseful or desperate, just tired, wounded, and yet full of the determination to see something through. It was something the general was familiar enough with after the battles he'd seen in his younger years. "Why do you want to destroy our people?" Montague asked. The Maorcum cocked his head.
"I have no desire to kill your people."
"Yet you threaten to destroy our kingdom."
"Your kingdom, yes, not your people. Or did you not find it at all strange that my men drove your people before us, but inflicted only the barest of casualties?"
"The reports from the borderlands said you killed thousands." The Maorcum cocked his head again and gave a disappointed shake.
"And I suppose you believe I painted myself in dung as well. Have you not learned yet, General? Your prince is a liar and a vicious man beneath that noble exterior he usually projects. Merely look at how easily I can drive the fool to violence, and it should be of little mystery. And I know this, I will bring him to ruin, even at the cost of my own life."
"But why? What did he do to you or your people to spark this?" The Knoll backed away from the bars, and Montague feared he was about to lose what little rapport he'd gained. But the Maorcum walked a circuit around his cell as he began to speak.
"3 turns of the moon ago, I returned to my people's mountain from a long journey of spiritual discovery. Spring was upon us, the cherry blossoms were in bloom, and the beauty of my mountain home was in full splendor, a temple to the ancient spirits. I had been gone nearly a year, and my people welcomed me back eagerly as their holy man. Though I wanted to return home to my wife and child, I remained several days in the valley to speak with my people, to answer their questions and set the anxieties of their daily lives a little more at ease. When I climbed farther up the mountain to my home, I found it eerily quiet, even the jubilant yapping of my daughter absent. And then I found my home in disarray, everything within destroyed, defiled with blood or urine or worse. I found no sign of my wife or daughter, so I held out hope that they had escaped or were perhaps taken captive to be sold as slaves. A terrible fate, yes, but one they could be rescued from."
Montague swallowed, but made no move or sound to interrupt.
"It was not until I searched the orchards that I found my wife." Do you even know what they did to her?"
the Maorcum asked, and the general shook his head.
"I suspect they would not have seen fit to rape what they considered an animal, but the condition of her body. She had been beaten, stabbed, disfigured, and ultimately..."
He paused and let out a long sigh, fighting off what the general suspected was a sob.
"They skinned her, took her pelt."
"Who?" Montague demanded, as incensed as the Knoll. Even if it was someone within the army, he'd have them stripped of any rank and then court-martialed for unsanctioned acts of war. The Knolls may not have been allies or even good neighbors, but anyone risking their wrath to engage in banditry had to be dealt with swiftly and mercilessly. The Maorcum ignored the question.
"It took much longer to find my daughter. I do not know if she suffered more or less. They drowned her, you see, but drowning is something that can take a long time when one does it to be vicious and cruel. And then they skinned her as well, leaving her body beside the mountain stream that ironically gave life to my home and the valley it sits above. They left my only family I had to be infested with maggots and picked at by birds and scavengers. And you know what the worst part of it was, General?"
Montague shook his head. How does one assign a worst part to something so savage?
"They had only been dead for a day or so,"
the Knoll said, dipping his snout to put his forehead against the cold stone wall.
had I not been in the valley those extra days, tending to the needs of my people.
Then you'd probably be dead too. The Marakim looked up at that, but then his brow came low, and he showed teeth for the first time in a threatening manner.
Was it you? Did you send them?
What? Montague was uncertain. He'd meant the comment to be reassuring, for all the good it would do. But that wasn't how the Knoll had perceived it, apparently.
The men who killed my wife and daughter were from this kingdom, General. They went specifically to my house, avoiding the rest of my people to take my family from me. Was it you that sent them?
Montague returned the scowl.
Of course not! I lead the armies in wartime, sir. I don't send my men to murder random villagers in the wilderness or neighboring territories. How do you know they were from Kashmi?
The Knoll approached the bars of the cell, but the general held his place. The Marakim was no longer scowling or showing his teeth. He gripped the bars of the cell and leaned as close to Montague as he could, then said,
"Because I found them, and I killed them before they could escape our mountains. I recovered and burned the pelts of my wife and daughter, then painted myself with your soldiers' blood and became Marakim. They wore the colors and insignias of your royal army. These were not bandits, human. These were assassins sent to my home by someone in your army. And I suspect that someone is the prince himself, though even if it was not, he is ultimately responsible."
The Marakim walked away, returning to the corner of his cell, and sat back down.
"And so I have come to destroy his kingdom,"
he said at length.
"It is those like you I pity, General, for you will suffer just as much as the fool who started this war."
"What are you planning? Do you really want innocent people to suffer?" Montague asked, gripping the bars and leaning into them in an ironic, pleading gesture.
"There is only one way out of this, and your prince is far too much of a coward to save his people,"
the Knoll answered.
"Your time is running short. I am Marakim."
"Gods damn it,"
Montague muttered under his breath, and then he returned to the exit of the cell block. "God!" Rather than return to his quarters, Montague instead had the guard led him into the opposite prison wing. There he found a similar sight, Wendra, left alone in the sole, unfurnished cell at the end of the block. Like the Maurkim's wing, this one, too, had been emptied of any other prisoners. The general had to wonder if the prince was keeping these two from speaking to anyone else, whether to spread sedition, get their stories to match up, or, and this seemed most likely, to avoid having anyone else witness his cruelty to either.
"Wendra,"
he said in a sharp whisper. The woman woke with a start and scrambled to her feet when she saw Montague. She at least had the dignity of clothes and a blanket to sleep under, unlike her Knoll companion. When she reached the bars, she bowed her head as if the general were some noble.
"What is it, sir?"
she asked, half in a yawn.
"Wendra, how close were you to the Marakim? Did you lie with him?"
She shook her head, but she'd heard the accusation enough times by now that it didn't even faze her to be asked so bluntly.
No, that wasn't... I was his servant. I washed and tended to his things, cooked for him, kept his tent in order when he was in the field fighting with his men. He never asked for more, never even implied he was expecting more. Some of his men occasionally tried to take advantage of the women they'd taken prisoner, but he, the Marakim, he wouldn't allow it. I don't speak their tongue, but from the way his men reacted, I think he told them it was wrong, or that it would bring ruin to his plan."
Montague let one brow rise. "Ruin his plan? And do you have any idea what that plan is, or was?"
"He never told me the entirety of it, my lord, but I know it was never to hurt people. They had to kill some of those who refused to retreat or surrender, but he never seemed intent on actually killing anyone. Best I can figure is that they just wanted to push us away from their border. But then it doesn't make sense that he'd let us be captured.
Wendra, this is important. None among us know this knoll anywhere near as well as you do. This has to have been a ruse of some kind. Anything you can tell us may not only save lives, but it may convince the prince to show you mercy.
The woman barked a laugh, but then covered her mouth. With no rebuke coming, she returned.
Mercy from the prince? I think both of us are far beyond that, sir. As I said, I don't know anything of the Marikim's plan, but that he mentioned, I don't know, something about the animals carrying the spirits of his ancestors. I fear you'd need to learn more of their ancestor worship to make any sense of it.
There's no time. He says our kingdom is going to be brought to ruin in a matter of days. We need to prevent that. Is there anything else you can tell me? Please try to remember if he said anything specific about the animals, or creatures like the dragon to the north.
Her eyes lit up.
The dragon! The dragon, the wolf, the hawk, and the serpent, she whispered. Look to the spirits of the animals.
Montague's stomach dropped into his pelvis. That wasn't a reference to the animals at all, but Wendra wouldn't know that.
Gods help us all, he muttered.
And with that, he turned on his heel and ran to the gate, yelling for the guard to come let him out immediately.
Joe Jackson currently has a 9-book fantasy series, The Eve of Redemption, with the 10th book due out June 1st. Marikim's War appears in the published anthology Beyond the Shadows, Volume 1, a grimdark anthology. Be sure to find him on Amazon or connect with him on Facebook. Links in the show notes.
2 down, 1 to go. Be sure to check back in this Friday for the epic conclusion of this 3-part series. And if you're not subscribed yet, it's super easy. You can listen on YouTube, Facebook, or any of the dozens of podcast apps out there. I'm Chris Herron, and that's it for today's Tall Tale TV.